The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Lucia and Jim O'Farrell are both with me in studio. And Lucia and Jim are the parents of Shane O'Farrell. People will remember Shane was killed in a hit and run incident while out cycling in Carrickmacross back in 2011. He was only 23 years old. You're both very welcome to studio.
Thank you.
Thanks a million for coming in. So I know you've had this meeting with Jim O'Callaghan, and I want to talk to you about that and about what you're looking for and what you might get in a moment. But first of all, just tell us a little bit, Lucia, about Shane.
Shane was our only son. He was 23. It was an absolute joy to know. He was every parent's ideal child, lovable, kind, good-natured. His sisters adored him. He was a happy-go-lucky, average young man that enjoyed life, adored rugby, was his passion, and English, and just took fun out of nature and the simple things, sitting on a bench, looking around and playing the guitar. He played in Whelan's with a group one night. He just was a really happy-go-lucky young man. He studied in UCD and then in Trinity, and just when he finished in Trinity, his master's in law, he was killed in a hit and run by an Eastern European Lithuanian heroin addict who was out on bail and in breach of bail from numerous district and circuit courts. He was on a suspended sentence both sides of the border. There were warrants out for his arrest, numerous warrants. He was on a peace bond. He had received two prison sentences which he hadn't served. In the first instance, he had received a sentence handed down in the district court for four counts of heroin. He appealed it, which he's entitled to do, but the court services accidentally filed away the appeal papers and the appeal was never heard. Had that error not taken place, Shane would be alive. In the second instance, despite the lab report saying diamorphine heroin, the guards wrote down the wrong exhibit numbers on the statement of evidence bag and the wrong items recorded in the bag, so he got off with a technicality as such, deficiencies in the state's case. An hour before Shane was killed, this car was pulled up by the drug squad. Sorry, what's an important point, and Jim O'Callaghan considers it very important also, is that 7 months before Shane was killed, this man appeared in Monaghan Circuit Court in relation to where he admitted guilt in relation to four theft offences. And the judge adjourned sentencing for a year on condition that he stay out of trouble, not re-offend, with permission to re-enter anywhere on the circuit. And he said, bring him back and I will jail him. Not I might jail him, I will jail him. Between that and killing Shane, he committed 11 further offences and wasn't returned. So an hour before Shane was killed, then he's pulled up by the drug squad. The driver's uninsured, no NCT, it's out of date. There are three known Lithuanian heroin addicts in the car, all known to the Gardaí and the PSNI. And they took them out, searched them, allowed Gradutska to assume the driving role and allowed the car on. He was later prosecuted for that policy. He'd given false misleading information, taken out fraudulent insurance. So this car was allowed to continue on its journey, and within an hour, now at the time when that car was pulled up, the driver of the car had previously been pulled up for no insurance. The 10 days had lapsed to produce insurance, so here he was again being pulled up with no insurance. That car was allowed to proceed, and within an hour, Shane was struck. He was on a bicycle. He was training for a triathlon. He'd been training all year. He was carried on the roof bonnet and windscreen. He never braked. This man fled the scene, left him to die alone on the road, hid the car in bushes, went back to his house, told his wife, I'm after knocking someone down, I don't know who, and they both went to bed. Nobody called an ambulance. What followed from that, you couldn't possibly make up. It was, while we were discussing a coffin, for our beautiful, healthy 23-year-old who was just about to start out in life, college finished, and all the plans he had made. And Garda Síochána said there's no objection to bail in this case and a file was being prepared for the DPP. Now, he was in breach of bail from numerous courts, so warrants out for his arrest, etc. Anyway, months passed and it went to the Criminal Courts of Justice, dangerous driving causing death. We had a very quick 2-day trial where they said that the judge directed the jury to acquit him. Now, an acquittal is that the prosecution haven't produced enough evidence to prove he's guilty. So he was acquitted and he was given a choice. He admitted failing to remain at the scene, failing to keep his vehicle at the scene, failing to call the services and having a defective vehicle. And he was given 8 months for that. But he was asked where his son was and he said Lithuania. He had one son, one child. And He said, would you like 8 months or would you like to join your son in Lithuania and would you like a few minutes to think about it? So he got a choice of what he would like to do after killing our child. And he was put on an Aer Lingus flight, basically, out of the country. He didn't serve a minute. So, you know, things didn't add up for us and people were approaching us and saying that they see this man's name in the paper regularly, etc., north and south of the border. So we started to study and look into, you know, his criminal history, to, you know, bit by bit. We were putting bits together to see that he had... he had been on suspended sentences and he had, you know, there were warrants out. So bit by bit, we could build up a picture of a timeline that this man should not have been at liberty at the time.
Yeah. There's so many different aspects of this that are worthy of investigation, which is partly, I guess, why you were meeting with Jim O'Callaghan today. That there's everything that leads up to the point of him hitting Shane in that car.
Yes.
And then there's the consequences for him afterwards. I mean, it just... I think to people at home, it just seems perverse that his punishment for killing your son is go home and spend the rest of your life with your son.
How is that acceptable? It isn't acceptable. I mean, remember we were in the Criminal Courts of Justice and when the judge said this, Jim looked at me as if that can't be right. And I thought, no, that can't be right. But he was allowed to talk with his legal team and make a decision. But what's important to note is that he bought a one-way ticket to comply with that order to leave within the 21 days. He was given 3 weeks, 21 days to leave the country. But he actually couldn't comply with that order because he was then jailed for insurance fraud, which hadn't been brought to the court and the court wasn't made aware of that prior because he hadn't been charged with
it.
And that was dealt with. So then he ended up not having been flown out of the country for a further 5.5 months. 3.5 months later, he went in June. He should have went in March.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've been trying to put together as a family, like, our beautiful darling Shane should be here living his life. How was this allowed to happen? So we started to look in and research it. Now, Jim O'Callaghan has been very supportive. And it was Jim, Minister O'Callaghan, I should refer to him as, who brought the motion in June 18 for a commission of investigation. He could see the failure. But at that stage, when he brought that motion, we weren't aware that of the court services error that they'd filed away the notice of appeal because it had been read out in the High Court when my husband Jim and Gemma were in the High Court that he had served the sentence and various decisions were made on foot of that.
Yeah.
So we also weren't aware of the second prison sentence that he was given, that there were deficiencies in the state's case. We weren't aware of warrants because that was 2018 when Jim brought that. So this is an even stronger case now. So he was very supportive in that, and Sinn Féin put in an amendment at that time to that the inquiry should be, it should be a public inquiry for full scrutiny.
Yeah.
And that was passed 2-1 in the Dáil for a public inquiry, which was fantastic. And Senator David Norris also brought an identical motion in the Shannon, and that too was passed in February 19. So here we have both houses of the Oireachtas, the Parliament of Ireland, voting for a public inquiry, but the will of the people wasn't respected.
Yeah.
And instead of that, they put in a district court judge to look at it behind the scenes, a scoping exercise. Now, I'm a retired nurse, so I wouldn't have any idea of the law, but I understand, and I've researched it, that a scoping exercise is a preliminary process to scope out what's needed to be investigated in greater detail.
Yeah.
It's not a statutory report, inquiry, so it can't make findings of fact, because to make findings of fact, evidence needs to be tested. But in this case, this report was produced 3 years later and published on the fourth year. And on the first page of the report, there's a footnote where there's an error. And that's, those errors are right the way through it, because Jim and I have forensically gone to great length to get the criminal history. Archives in the libraries, we've went to made applications to get court orders. We have attended Stormont. We were in Westminster, we were in London, we were in Brussels. We went to Newry, to the courts, to Belfast, because he was in Belfast in custody in MacAvery Prison. In Newry, 2 weeks before he killed Shane, he was in custody, held overnight in the barracks. Part of the bail conditions in the South was do not leave the jurisdiction. He was being pulled up at 12 o'clock at night. The curfew was 11. It didn't seem to matter. He walked in and out of court across the Northeast.
So
the more we researched and dug, the bigger the story became. And so Jim, here we had now a vote in both houses, but a scoping exercise was put in place. So we initially and reluctantly went along with it, thinking, oh, this is going to be a fresh pair of eyes to look at this.
Yeah.
But the first item on the terms of reference is to look at the outcome or reports of investigations of inquiries, including the GSOC reports. There were two GSOC reports.
Yeah.
And he didn't get them, nor did he request them. Our solicitor wrote to him and said, did you get the GSOC reports? And he replied, no. I have that email here. And he said, did you request them? And he said, no. So the very first line on the terms of reference. So, you know, he makes findings of fact on where Shane was on the road. There were no witnesses to that. And Zigmantas Gruduska, the Lithuanian, admit lying to the guards when he was in the Garda station. Mm. So we're dealing with Shane can't speak, obviously. So he can't make findings of fact. That evidence needs to be tested. And also, I understand on the 26th of February 2019, there was a Supreme Court decision in Chatter versus Gearan, and I have a copy with me. And in that judgment, it said findings, because this is an ad hoc process, findings of fact should not be made.
Yeah.
And that the terms of reference are the legal boundaries of what you should look at and also what you should not look at. So he went with that outside his terms of reference. He dealt with issues that he didn't deal with issues that were in the terms of reference, like the GSOC report. The department put one of the terms of references to look at this thing called an independent review mechanism report, but in actual fact, they refused to waive a privilege to give it to him.
Yeah.
Yet it was part of his terms of reference. So there was a lot going on. We withdrew from the process. We could see a lot of errors. We found it was not a balanced report. It was very misleading. But on reading it, you wouldn't know that unless you knew the other story as well. And maybe I'll give you an example of that. In one case, two guards were to be disciplined and a fine of €200. And they took, because the court hadn't been informed of the a decision in the circuit court. And they took judicial review proceedings and they won on consent by the Garda Commissioner. So all that's in the report is that they were successful and on consent with the judicial review. But that fails to say why. And the reason why they were successful is that no document could be shown that they were trained on the Pulse system to look up the court tab to see what the previous judge had said. And we have that affidavit there. That's one example. And a second one where I mentioned he received a second prison sentence and the lab report said it was diamorphine. The sentence was adjourned. He appealed it and it was adjourned. And all that says in the report is his appeal was successful. But it doesn't say that his appeal was successful because there were deficiencies in the state's case, because the guards were in the wrong exhibit numbers. So this report, there's another story that's not being told. It's victim blaming. You know, it's full of errors. In one case, he's an offence committed, a date of an offence, and it's 10 months before he was prosecuted 10 months before the offence was committed, and it's not vice versa.
Okay.
So there's dates contradictory with the summary GSOC report. So it's extremely flawed and. Yeah.
There's a sense of, I mean, there comes across the way you tell the story, a sense of just continual deja vu. The same thing keeps happening. You keep kind of finding more and more problems and more
Absolutely.
And more errors made, you know, evidence misfiled, things
Absolutely.
Miscategorized in reports. You finally get a vote in favour of what you think is going to be a public inquiry or certainly an inquiry. You end up with the scoping mechanism or the scoping inquiry. The scoping inquiry doesn't look into areas it's meant to look into. It looks into areas it's not meant to look into. Then you find this whole other criminal history in the north when he wasn't even meant to have left the jurisdiction. What is that like for ye to be continually finding out?
Well,
I guess each one of them nearly a reason that Shane should be alive.
Oh, there's so many reasons, but you think you know it all and you think you've got it until you hear something else and you're thinking, wow, and that's another body blow, really. Like we're approaching the 14th anniversary. Shane's birthday is the end of the month. He would be 37. He was killed at 23, just the weekend he finished college. He'd been in UCD and Trinity and he was just looking forward to travelling and going to a rugby game, etc. And here he was, you know, killed at 23. So to discover more and more information, and we know there's a file on this man in the Garda National Crime, Security and Intelligence Service, and we understand that this deals with international terrorism and informers. So, you know, to commit 30 offences while on bail, you know, did he have a relationship with the Gardaí? You know, was he an informer? We've been asking that question since Shane was killed and nobody has given us an answer. In the report, the scoping exercise report, it says in relation to three above, which is was he an informer, it says there is a file on him, but it doesn't give us any detail about what's in that file.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have a lot of, GSOC carried out 7 years investigating this. They produced two reports. Both have been refused to us.
Yeah.
I mean, one was a public interest report. Surely it's in the public interest.
They might not have been refused to the district court judge, but he didn't ask for them, as you said, in the scoping inquiry.
You know, but maybe we would have been entitled to them if he asked for them, you see.
What did Jim O'Callaghan say to you today?
Well, Jim has a good grasp of this because I've been showing him documents over the years. So he's aware, very tuned up to what the failures are. And he knows that we can produce the evidence of what we can stand over what we're saying. So he said he listened intently. He's very respectful. He said that he would... he hadn't made any decision yet what to do. He took on board what we had to say regarding bail and the problems with bail, which is a very current topic at the moment, regarding warrants, suspended sentences. You know, when a judge says, bring him back and I'll jail him, how is a guard not trained up to do that? How, like, who is the judge talking to if he says, bring him back and I will jail him if he commits another offence and he commits 11 offences and nobody brings him back? So, you know, there's a lot of public interest issues. So we addressed those and he said, well, look, you know, I'll think about it and I'll come back with a decision. Now, we didn't push him on when he'd come back to us because I'm sure he's new in the job and he's probably under a lot of pressure from a lot of angles. So he didn't rule out anything, but he didn't commit either. So we're hopeful that, please God,
he okay. Well, listen, we wish you the best of luck in that regard. And we'll be speaking to Jim O'Callaghan as we do kind of intermittently on the show. Sorry, Lucy, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I see from a media report that they have a quote from the Department of Justice that said that Mr. O'Callaghan had a very engaging meeting with the O'Farrell family. Mm. He listened to the views and will now take time to consider the matter further.
Whatever that means. Well, listen, we will certainly put it to him and we will keep in touch with you if that's okay.
I think only an open, transparent, comprehensive and independent inquiry. Yeah. You know, you see what's going on in OMA at the moment, all those years later. People shouldn't have to wait years. You know, they put their grief on hold. They're trying to address this and only then can we grieve. So we you know, we're approaching, you know, do the right thing. You know, who's afraid of the truth? You know, surely the truth will set people free, and it would also help to change the system and fix it so that maybe if they had done this in the beginning when Shane was killed, there would be less problems with bail now. Maybe it would be addressed.
It's 14 long years, Jim.
Yeah, well, we feel like we'd like this to come to a conclusion now at this age because it's going on so long. And like, we feel like we're on a merry-go-round here. You know, we want to get off. But the other agents of state or whatever, you know, they want to keep it going as long as possible. We want to get off as quick as possible. So we're just hopeful that maybe it could come, you know, to an end shortly.
Well, you've been stuck on it for, like I say, 14 years.
Yeah.
14 years too long, yeah.
We've been put from one process into another. Like, as I say, it was 7 years with GSOC, a year and a half with this independent review mechanism in the middle of that 7 years. They couldn't look at it because it was with GSOC. We had 4 years of a scoping exercise. And, you know, basic questions haven't been answered for our family. Why was this man at liberty?
Yeah.
Was he an informer? Did he have a relationship? Is that why he was treated so leniently? You know,
simple questions that nobody should be afraid of.
No.
Nobody should be afraid of. Lucy and Jim, thanks a million for coming in to us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.